Welcome everyone to Asian Pacific Voices Radio, where you'll find stimulating conversations that explore diverse topics and stories impacting our Asian Pacific American communities. I'm your host, Arnold Chun. My guest today is an award-winning disabled industrial designer, artist, and advocate who weaves her inspiring narrative from South Korea to Michigan and now California. With a rare muscle-wasting disorder shaping her journey, Cam's creativity and resilience take center stage. It is my pleasure and honor to welcome Cam Redlost on Asian Pacific Voices Radio. Hello, Cam. Thank you for joining us.
Hi, Arnold. Great to be here.
So, you have just a very unique background when it comes to your design journey, but at the same time, battling this disorder that you have. I'd love to see, firstly, if you could share some highlights of your multicultural background, being from South Korea. Then you were adopted by American parents and raised in Michigan, and now you're living in California. Just love to hear you share a little bit of how each location influenced your identity, if any.
So I was born in Daegu, South Korea, and I was born in a little maternity clinic, and at birth I was abandoned, and I had been placed into an orphanage for about 4 years until I had been adopted by an American family in Michigan. And so I think in 1983, I took the plane ride over to the United States in a Chicago airport, and that is where my new family had picked me up. And I pretty much was raised, I had a very quintessential, typical Midwest upbringing. My parents were like middle class or a little bit below. They had three sons already, and they really wanted a daughter. So I think one of their friends had just adopted a Korean adoptee. And so that inspired them to adopt as well. So they thought, well, we've had three sons, better chance of getting the girl that we want if we adopt. So that's how I came about. The joke is always, I was the import and they were the homemade ones. So, I had three brothers. I grew up playing a lot of sports, very typical Midwest type of perspective and upbringing. I was raised in Chesterfield, Michigan, which is a smaller suburbia and was mostly a white dominated area, including my school upbringing and such things like that. And so I grew up more like a tomboy. I played a lot of sports. And then after college, I went to school for industrial design at CCS in Detroit. And after I had graduated from there, I had moved to California. And one of the things I really like about my story is that I do get the benefit of having a wide swath of experiences from different perspectives, from Midwest and kind of understanding where a lot of the people from Midwest come from, to Korea, which I became more in contact with my culture and where I came from during my college years, because at CCS Detroit, there was a high amount of Korean international students who came over to do specifically the automotive trans program and automotive program. And so that's where I kind of really started becoming in touch with my Korean culture, from cooking to K-dramas to trying to learn the language, to even going back to my home country in 2003 when I was in college. But then when I moved out to California, California felt more like who I really was on the inside. And I think number one is it offered a very diverse, I call a buffet of types of people and cultures and experiences and more open-mindedness than I had ever received in Michigan. So I consider myself very lucky to have, I value all those perspectives. Some people, especially adoptees, maybe, you know, they don't like as much that they were taken out of their culture and things like that. But I consider myself kind of lucky that I've gotten to see so many perspectives that have contributed to who I am.
That's amazing. I've never been to Michigan, to be honest. And I just had a question, like when you came to California, did the plethora of ethnic food like blow you away? Like the just vast array of choices that you had here?
Oh, yeah, for sure. That's where, like, hands down, California has above most. I mean, Korean alone is the highest concentration of Korean foods outside of Korea. So I already knew about Korean food and Asian food. I was really exploring it when I lived, in Detroit, was going to school there. But yeah, really, that's what's amazing is you've got all these little pockets. You've got, you know, Saigon town, you've got Thai town, you've got, you know, a plethora of Middle Eastern foods. You got like everything here. So that really did blow me away. Yes.
So I know I can't get enough of just everything, especially we have like the best Mexican food here ever. I mean, it's just carne asada nachos like all day, every day, my wife and I.
I know every time we have friends in Michigan who talk about Mexican food, it's like, well, you got to try it out in California because that's where it's at.
Yeah. So I want to touch upon, like, you've obviously won several awards. I mean, being a disabled industrial designer, an artist, an advocate, a writer, a consultant, a speaker, which of those journeys maybe were like the more passionate than others, if that makes sense, or for the particular diverse fields that you're in, was there something in particular that was really more passionate for you than others?
I think what has contributed to sort of the journey of being able to try all these different avenues is I think I'm more of a creative first. And I think people traditionally view creative as only people who draw or artists. And for me, I view it as such a larger, complex structure of interacting with life and the way we problem solve and the way we traverse ourselves throughout our own life's journey. So my husband always laughs, Jason, because he says I probably could have done any number one of fields, because I think one of the things that I didn't quite value as much when I was younger, but I really do now, is my large set of interests in terms of curiosity. I find most things are generally similar in terms of patterns and systems. So, you know, when I was younger, I really wanted to be an anthropologist. I wanted to be a paleontologist. I was really into astronomy, psychology, and psychological research. And I've just found like a lot of these things. When I was going to college, I was going for automotive design. And I really loved the design aspect and being able to, that the fact that it encompassed not just drawing, but designing and then marketing and then and understanding humans and things like that. So I think that's where I started, but I always felt a little bit offbeat because I had so many interests. Whereas when you're in car design, you typically only like cars and that's it, where I would bring a lot of my other interests. So I think overall, like in one word, I would say I'm just very curious. And I think I've learned that that's not a negative thing as I've gotten older, that it can bring you about into other areas like it has for me, from design to writing to illustrating to advocating. They all have similar systems and patterns that I find really interesting and sparks curiosity.
Mm. Now, I know you've been living with GNE myopathy. It's a rare degenerative muscle wasting disorder since your late teens, as I've read. Anything that you can enlighten us about GNE and the elaborate work on how it's affected your journey and how it's influenced your just outlook on life and work in that sense?
Yeah, so it was really beginning, the symptoms from GNE myopathy began when I was 15, and I didn't quite find the correct diagnosis until about 2003 in my college years at Mayo Clinic. And prior, I had been given a list of different diagnoses that were incorrect. But basically, GNE is a genetic condition, which was unusual because it was like, I never knew my biological family, and here I'm suddenly connected through this genetic disease that was passed down from my parents. And what I had was the Japanese genetic mutation, which is the second most common form of mutation for this GNE myopathy condition. And so it's been an interesting experience because one never expects to ever have such a condition in their life. And I just remember when I was young, like knowing about muscular dystrophy, but of course never understanding that that would be something that would basically wrap my entire life. So since I began when I was 15 and I've kind of gone from being a soccer player to now almost completely immobile, it's really been a wild ride. It's basically helped dictate so much of the direction of my life and also brought in other characteristics of who I really am. It brings it out a lot louder because you're forced to. And what I would say is mostly what it's done is it's obviously made me realize about how life is so impermanent and temporary and how important, basically from the onset of the disease, when I realized what I have, it triggered me to live my life how I want to live and live as much as possible, knowing that I would be completely immobile and then some in the future. So one of the aspects that that's done for me is created a very long life of doing a lot of crazy things I would have never have expected to be able to do, from parasailing to skydiving to traveling the world to being able to become a writer and all this stuff. And I think that's really, I credit my disability and kind of like giving me that, you know, trajectory and outlook in my life.
That's a really positive way to look at it. I mean, I can't even begin to imagine what you've had to endure emotionally, mentally, when you first diagnosed. And just for some education, please correct me if I'm wrong, because I don't know much about it. There's no, and for our audience, there's no cure, right? This is not something curable.
Right. There is no treatment right now. At the time when it was diagnosed, as 1 in 1,000,000. So it was considered ultra rare. And at the time when I had come to California, I had been told I would never meet another patient by myself, or myself, or that treatment would ever be done. And I ended up becoming one of the handful of patients globally that was even talking about it, because back then, very little was still known, and a lot of people were in hiding. As you know, with Asian culture and other cultures, even Middle Eastern or other cultures, they traditionally view disability as a negative. And then definitely a genetic condition is something that people can be secretive about. So that's why I really started talking about it, because I realized that nobody was talking about it. And I had started involving myself or helping at the beginning of treatment development and seeing where that could go. And I've since evolved to more advocacy of general disability and rare diseases, just because I realized that the journey for pharmaceutical and treatment is very long and arduous and even political and sometimes difficult to watch. And so I realized that it was also equally important for other disabled people and chronically ill to realize that sometimes some of us wait our whole life for treatment and it never happens. But in that time, it's really important to learn, how do we still live and not view our lives as completely over, you know, like we can't do anything just because of this.
Mm-hmm. Oh, thank you for sharing that. That's just so great to know and understand. I think obviously most people probably don't have much information about this particular disease. And so thank you for sharing that. Wanted to ask you really quickly. I read that, you know, you have a pretty diverse portfolio. You have a pretty diverse portfolio. And I'm just curious, you know, as your role as an industrial designer and you're an advocate, you're an artist, how did you find integrating the creativity and advocacy in your projects? Like, tell us about some of the things that were challenges to you in that process. And then obviously you ended up, you know, going into designing the world's cheapest prosthetic knee joint for underserved communities. I'd love to hear about the genesis of like how that came about as it relates to like the challenges that you face and, you know, how you ended up integrating your creativity and advocacy in that way.
I think there's a great line. I think Mark Twain said it, and he wrote, write what you know. And I think I've used that sentiment kind of to direct my life. I've always been really concerned about social issues, and it wasn't even something that was really taught to me in my household. It was just something like, since I was like 13, I was volunteering myself to drive, you know, drug addicts to their monthly medical conditions, or, you know, working in homeless communities. It's something that was always something I think I've always probably would have been an advocacy in some form, if not that I would have gotten a disability myself. But for me, I think having that passion and then pairing it with creativity, which is something that I think we all innately have. And like I said earlier, we sometimes evaluate it as what it's not. We think it's only drawing related. I think there's a creative spark that lives in all of us, and we don't think about how every day that we live, we're constantly problem solving and making creative solutions to traverse ourselves through life. But I think the passion for creativity and realizing how much that could extend to all areas that I was interested in, and kind of when I was going to school to be an industrial designer, I knew I was going through disability, and I thought to myself, durable medical goods, they're so uninspiring, they're so utilitarian looking. And I always wondered, like, how do we make things like that more designery, more something that people want to sit in? So I think that's been kind of the driving force to a lot of these projects. And when I started advocating, when I moved to California, it was just natural that I ended up bringing some of these curiosities and creative approach to looking at life into my art, into my writing, and it all generally circled my disability advocacy. And when the world's cheapest knee joint came up, I have been designing products. I was working in the toy industry and things like that. I had heard about that project and I got involved, and I thought that was just such an amazing example of what design really can be used for in creativity. Often we think, I'm an industrial designer, and a lot of it is about, you know, Apple products and Lexus and Tesla and how cool and all these things are. And those are great. But if we compare that also with doing some real good in the world and people that don't have access to these types of things, whether it's a product or whether it's just access to realizing you're not alone, that's what I think I've wrapped my entire life in is basically talking to the general community. But what I've learned, not as someone who is like a life coach, a superior, I actually just like that term, life coach, but nothing like that. It's just like, I'm just sharing my perspective as another perspective in the great big circle that, you know, we all exist in. So.
Yeah, I see here you've been for 15 years being a voice for the disabled community. On that note, I'd love to hear some of the wins, you know, some of the triumphs and challenges that you had to go through. And you've also won advocating for greater awareness of this understanding. Like, really would love to hear you share about that and also like how you use design to educate us, the society, with limited, you know, understanding and you know, not seeing this kind of representation all the time. If you could share about that as well.
Yeah. You know, when I started advocating, I moved to California. I had no experience. I had worked around nonprofits, but now I was kind of at the head of a nonprofit. And immediately what I said was, there are no patients talking about this. So I got a handful of patients that were willing to be photographed and I shared their stories. And I think one of the challenges originally in the community was how rare it was and how the fact that a lot of communities that were more closed were hiding the genetic condition. So for me, it was all about storytelling and opening that space of vulnerability so people realize, like, it's okay for you to publicly share this. It's okay. You don't have to perceive it as a weakness. So that was one of the biggest challenges in the beginning, was taking these communities that were global and kind of sharing through example that, hey, I'm sharing my story loudly and I'm not ashamed. And this is very important, so more people know about it. But also from the aspect of understanding how treatment development works in this country. And when you're a rare disease, how much more difficult that is, because of course, pharma and privatized insurance, you know, big pharma want to work on the conditions that is going to give them the most amount of money. And that's just not the case all the time with rare diseases. So I think what I transformed my advocacy from, because when I started, it was more about talking about the disease. And now it's more talking about the human condition, because I think that relates more to people and trying to remind people that we're all the same. Essentially, we all have the same types of, you know, grief, loss. You know, we all know what it's like to experience maybe a loved one that's going through health conditions, you know, and trying to connect with people that way, rather than just talking about disease and disability. So I think that's been the one way I've used my voice and creativity to educate people, is to talk about the human condition first, so people can, because people can understand that.
Mm. Is that where it led you to the inspiration to just basically start the children's book with your husband for, you know, co-founding Chair Devils? I would love to hear you talk about that, because it's pretty amazing. You're doing a children's book now. Like, how many talents you got? All these amazing talents.
Yeah, you know, when I started advocating, I began writing, and then I started, you know, I knew how to draw, but drawing industrial design is very difficult. Like a product over a character or an environment is very different. So I began became a self-taught illustrator, because I thought maybe people would, everyone identifies something or understands something differently. It could be in writing, it could be visual, just an image sometimes will make people like pause and maybe think about something differently. So all of my art has been built around moments of my progressive rare condition. And the children's book I'm working on actually comes out this fall. I'm pretty sure that's the launch date. And it's inspired by, like, all of my work, it's based around my disability and rare disease. And so this book is actually, it's not my husband and I, we're working on this, but we did co-found Chair Devils together. But with the Monster Me, what happened was, I was living in San Francisco and I had fell. At the time, I was using a cane and leg braces. And at this stage of the milestone of my condition, I couldn't get up by myself anymore. So I, you know, texted my husband, I fell, and he was working an hour away. So he had to come all the way home to lift me up. So while I was waiting on the floor, I just remember seeing this foot of this gray furry monster. And I envisioned that he was the reason for all my falls, for all my struggles. And as soon as I got up after my husband left, I did this little illustration of this little monster. It was very cute and forlorn, and he was like hiding in the trees. And I was a character that just didn't want him around me. And why is he following me? And I just couldn't understand why he was with me. And what that relationship, for me, what this metaphor was really about teaching is that this is a relationship with myself, much like a lot of struggles that we all have. It's more of a relationship with yourself than with an external force. And it's about also having empathy for those types of situations. So I envisioned this monster as this cute, furry guy who, he was really sweet. He didn't know why I didn't want him around. And all he knew is that he had to be with me. And so this little moment has transpired into a children's book that's coming out this fall. And it's about that relationship, about that. How do you have that journey to acceptance? And how do you still live and have adventure and still, you know, deal with those types of shadows that we all have in our lives?
Mm. Where would we be able to find the book? How can we get it?
So if you just follow me on Instagram, I'll be able to give updates on when that officially is coming out. But probably in any bookstore, Amazon, you know. But yeah, I will be sharing more about that as it's finalized. Yeah.
Fantastic. So what kind of advice do you give for others facing similar challenges? What's the message, the hope that you wish to convey based on your life's journey and your creative endeavors? What can we take away as encouragement that you would give?
You know, I think I do talk about disability, but like I've said, I've really honed in more on talking about the human condition because, yes, you might not have a disability, but what's really the important takeaway for me is that life is full of struggles and we don't get to choose what they are. And yes, it's important. You know, we go through the stages of not wanting this to happen and this or that, but ultimately we have to accept there's a certain amount of logic associated with it where, you know, things happen and we have to figure out it's not going to go away. This disability is not going away. It's been with me for probably like 30 years now of my life. And so how do I use it as a springboard to live much of my life? How do I, of course, we can fantasize about all these things, you know, like, oh, I wish this was better. I wish this wouldn't have happened. I wish I wasn't abandoned and this one, but it's really, you can't really tell a different avenue would have necessarily been better. You know, I don't kind of live in those fantasies. I try to live like, what do I have now? What are the pieces I have now to work with? And how can I build a life from that? So I think that's been my number one thing that I really want to communicate to people is, one, I think human emotions are extremely important, and I don't think we've given enough light and importance on why we should deal with the difficulties in our life, like really difficult, like really deal with them and confront them. And then also how to learn to still live with those despite it, knowing that they're not going to go away. I think those are the two. And then also in understanding your own emotions, you can understand and have empathy for other people and understand that we're all just kind of trying to make it in life.
Yeah. Mm. Thank you for sharing that. So I have to ask, and I saw this on your Instagram page, and it was the first time I've never really seen it before, but I remembered you had a caption, "Disabled people like sex too." I was so taken back by that. I didn't even know that's like a stigma. Like, where is the genesis of that? Is that a regular stigma that's out there? Would love, if you don't want to share about it, no problem. But I was just taken back. I didn't think that was like an issue. Is that something that really affects the disabled community?
Yeah, well, that's, I guess that's a good perspective from you that you're saying that you didn't look at disabled people, but it seems so simple and inconsequential, but it is. And just as simple as saying disabled people like sex might come off like, oh, just trying to be sensational or whatever. But people don't realize down to the basic nature of who we are, that is an important topic for most people. And what that has done, that misinformation or ignorance about people just assume disabled people, one, can't have sex. They're not interested. They typically assume that I can't feel anything or disabled people can't feel anything. And so what that does automatically in their mind, even if they don't realize it, is it takes a humanity level out of, meaning you're no longer an option to date. You're broken. You can't do these things. And there's this assumption where the disabled community has been viewed as a monolith. And how harmful those really seemingly small things can be. So that's like a topic I really like talking about because it seems so simple. And I've had friends say, oh, you know, back in college days, I met someone who was disabled, but honestly, I didn't think that was an option. And I thought, she was super cute and I didn't realize that. And that just goes to show like how we've all been, you know, I don't think all ignorance is malice. I think we all have limited exposure to things, and just that's just kind of the message that I think society has given through media when they don't see disabled people out there, you know, in all venues, but even in the intimacy or dating level, what that can do.
Thank you for sharing that. That was very empowering. I really appreciate that. And last question for you. If your life story were to be animated as a film, what celebrity would you choose to voice your character? And what quirky sidekick would you have accompanying you on your adventures?
So I have to pick an Asian because I'm Asian. So I love Michelle Yeoh, just because she just like kind of exudes like this wisdom and balance and strength. Sandra Oh, because she has like a calmness about her, another kind of, and then like Lucy Liu, just because I love Kill Bill, and you know, she always plays these, you know, take no crap from people type of persona. So I can be any number one of those people. So I like that. And then sidekick. I'm not sure. I'd have to think about the actual character, but definitely someone who has a lot of sense of humor and is a smart. I'm not sure I can say the word, but smart butt. You know, someone who's, you know, got some sass and can add levity to difficult situations.
That's fun. I love the characters you mentioned. My gosh, thank you so much. This was just a lot of fun hearing your perspective and hearing your journey and being able to learn more about you. Just again, thanks for your time. So Cam, it was just an amazing time listening to your journey, listening to just all the things that you've had to go through and just the triumphs and the wins. And so we really thank you just for your time coming here to share with our audience and our listeners just your incredible story and your incredible journey.
Thank you, Arnold and Asian Pacific Voice, for, you know, just continue to elevate the stories that surround us.
We would also love to hear from you, our valued listeners, about any suggestions for future guests or topics. Don't forget to subscribe to our program on your favorite podcast platform and follow us on Facebook, X, Instagram, and our YouTube channel. Asian Pacific Voices Radio is produced by Asian Culture and Media Alliance, a nonprofit that empowers the Asian Pacific American communities with a voice through media arts. If you would like to support our program, please visit AsianPacificVoicesRadio.com. I'm Arnold Chun. Please join us next week for another exciting and thought-provoking Asian Pacific Voices Radio show. Until then, take care, everybody.